The majority of dentists in Indianapolis and across the country do not do what Dr. Randy Shoup does. Because guess what? It's not easy. Practicing microscopic dentistry takes thorough education and ongoing best practices with the very latest technology, which leads to solving problems when they're small rather than waiting until pain hits or more expensive and bigger procedures have to happen. The Microscope Dentistry by Shoup difference is about ultra magnification treatments and controlling expenses. Learn more now during the Dr. Shoup Show. Check us out online anytime at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, hello, everybody. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much for deciding to spend an hour with me. This is where you go to become more educated, a smarter, more savvy medical, dental, health, wellness, nutrition consumer. You will know all the right questions to ask, but better than that, you're going to know the answers that you're going to expect back. Your healthcare providers are going to be in the hot seat when you show up, because you're going to know how to take care of yourself long term. And that's the point of the show. We start in Dental School 101. You and I hold hands. We walk down the hall. We take our seat in class. And today, I'm going to share with you one of those pull-the-curtain-back moments, a disturbing trend I'm seeing with newer dentists. What they are telling their patients about certain teeth being hopeless, can't be repaired, can't be fixed, we just need to take them out and put in implants. The fact of the matter is, they're not hopeless, and they can be fixed. And I'm going to tell you why this trend is really disturbing. And in Ask the Expert, we're going to continue our deep look at the new patient experience. Why should a dentist look at your eyes during a dental exam? I'll tell you, it's a really important thing to look at. And you get to meet my good friend Darcy. Darcy has become one of our favorites, so much so that my technician actually bedazzled her teeth models with little glass rhinestones. I saw it on my desk and I thought, what on earth is this all about? But the important thing that Darcy is going to share, she worked in the dental world for a while and actually got dental work for free. Wouldn't you take advantage of free dental work? Well, she did, and it's costing her dearly. She's going to tell you all about that. But first, is a robot with artificial intelligence better than your human doctor predicting your heart attack? I'll tell you the truth about it right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Well, I tell you what, this piece of information came across my desk, obviously from some advanced research that's being done out in the world today. It harkened back to a conversation you and I had probably 3 or 4 years ago, when you and I had a conversation about how IBM had developed a computer system that was being used at Duke University Medical Center for their tumor board. And this computer was being fed every piece of research data that was being assembled from around the world, and it created some algorithms that looked at and analyzed all of this cancer research data. And it would then create a list of what to do, what is the best practice to do for any particular kind of cancer. So Duke University had this very, very knowledgeable tumor board, and all of the physicians around this table were all experts, and they would discuss these cancer patients and what do we think we should do. The computer was equal to, if not better than, more up to date on the data and the research than the tumor board was. So this new piece of data came across my desk. Listen to this. Researchers at the National Institutes of Health and the University of Wisconsin have demonstrated that using artificial intelligence to analyze CT scans, that's CAT scans, can produce more accurate risk assessment for major cardiovascular events than current standard methods such as the Framingham Risk Scores, FRS, and Body Mass Index, the BMI. Now, you and I have talked about the Framingham study, Framingham, Massachusetts. It is the gold standard. It is the largest following of patients for cardiovascular disease, and it really has set the standard for assessing risk for heart attacks. And this artificial intelligence outshines all of that. There are 80 million CT scans performed every year in the United States. 80 million CT scans are performed on people in the U.S. every year. Abdominal scans, which are done for routine colorectal cancer screening, revealed important information about heart-related risks when this AI was used to analyze the images. So think about this. These researchers have developed this artificial intelligence, this algorithm base, and they can take existing CT scans that have nothing to do with your heart. They used CT scans, CAT scans, that people were getting for routine colorectal cancer screening tests. They weren't even shooting a picture of your heart, okay? They ran these CT scans through this AI, artificial intelligence, and the AI was able to predict far more accurately this patient's cardiovascular risk, far more accurately than the Framingham study, and it absolutely left in the dust this whole concept of BMI being an indicator of what somebody's future is going to be cardiovascular-wise. The CT measure of aortic calcification, that builds up of that buildup of calcium deposits in the aortic valve, alone significantly outperformed the Framingham study in major cardiovascular events. The researchers also observed that the BMI was a poor predictor of cardiovascular events and overall survival. What the researcher said was, this automated process requires no additional time, no additional effort, no additional radiation or exposure to the patient, no additional money out of your pocket, no sweat off of anybody's brow, yet these prognostic measures could one day impact patient health through pre-symptomatic detection of elevated cardiovascular and other health risks. That is a really complicated sentence. Don't you love how they write this stuff? Listen to this. This automated process requires no additional time, effort, or radiation exposure to patients. Yet, this is the good part, these prognostic measures could one day impact patient health through pre-symptomatic detection of elevated cardiovascular or other health risks. In other words, this technology is opening the door for you to take all of those x-rays, all of those CT scans, all of those MRIs, all of those any sort of images that you've had done, run them through these new algorithms for this artificial intelligence, and they can tell you so much more about your future health than we ever thought possible. Think of all of the things that you could simply take your old images and look at them through these algorithms, and it would tell you greater volumes of information than your physician or any radiologist can read today. It's stunning the amount of data that is on your records right now that people just don't know how to tap into. So can artificial intelligence do better at predicting your health than your doc? You bet your booties. And it's coming, so I'll keep you apprised of it as we move forward. Now, up next, I'm going to share with you a really disturbing trend that I see in young dentists telling patients about complex restorative problems that aren't that complex. I'll tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com.
You are now about to enter.
It's time to enter Dental School 101.
Enter now.
You think this class may be simple, but we go deeper with the knowledge and research every week to teach you and grow you into the best dental consumer you can be. You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. We're online at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
I can only use what I learned from you. And the rest are quiet.
Well, it's so good to have you here. Thank you very, very much. And this subject came to me because I have had, in the recent past, several patients come to me telling me that their other dentist had told them that tooth A, tooth B, whatever, was hopeless, could not be fixed, could not be saved, had to be extracted, and had to have an implant and an implant reconstruction. They came to me for a second opinion, and I started seeing this trend. And I started asking, not in particular who the dentist was, don't need to know that, but I said, how old is this dentist, and how long have they been in practice? And invariably, they were, 2-3 years out of dental school into practice, maybe 5 years into practice. And so I started doing some due diligence and some sleuthing on this. And here's what I have discovered. You and I have talked about before a significant change in what dental education is constituted today. And I know this is going to sound like one of those things where, you know, in my day, we walked uphill both directions to school barefoot in the snow and read by candlelight. No, it's not one of those. But there was a different curriculum, a different set of standards 20 years ago in dental school. We were required to do all of our own dental laboratory work. We didn't ship anything out to the dental lab. We were taught how to make things. None of that is taught today. And so what is the genesis of what I'm seeing today is dental schools have a really big problem. I fully acknowledge this, that they don't have the patient base that they used to. It is common in a dental school that a group of students will have to share a patient. For example, if a patient needs a root canal on a molar, most molar teeth in for humans has 3 or 4 roots on it. They'll get 3 or 4 students, and each student will get one of the roots of the tooth to do the root canal on. So a patient will have 4 or 3 or 4 different dentist students doing the root canal. That's the extent of the root canals. There are some schools that don't allow undergraduates to do root canals on people. All of their experience is on models in a laboratory. And because of this deficit in terms of the number of patients, the students don't get an opportunity to rebuild those teeth. We've talked about how I'm doing a lecture series right now. I'm going to be around the country here and then going to Argentina to talk in a large meeting down there in August on how to specifically rebuild a tooth that has had a root canal. So what I'm seeing is, and what I received a telephone call the other day. A patient called and said, I've got my dentist telling me that I have a tooth that is hopeless, can't be restored, it's got too much decay, and that I could do a root canal, but even if you did a root canal, it probably wouldn't work, and it needs to be extracted, and I need an implant and a crown. Would Dr. Shoup be willing to take a look at the x-ray and just give me a ballpark? Do you think this is doable? I got the x-ray in, and I looked at this tooth, and I thought to myself, this is simple. This is one of the easier ones. There's nothing complicated about this. Yes, there's a big cavity in it. I fix this stuff all day long. And so we called the patient back and said, no, this is a fixable tooth. And the patient said, great. So they trotted off to go get their root canal, and they're going to come in and let me put the tooth back together. But the problem is younger dentists simply don't have the skill. They don't have the experience. They don't have the track record to know how to restore these teeth. And here's the part that gets me. That lack of knowledge doesn't translate to the dentist sitting there chairside with you and go, you know, I've seen this kind of stuff before, and I really don't have any experience doing this, and I really have never done one. And so just because I've not done one or don't have experience doing it, it doesn't mean it can't be done. So the tooth is restorable, but you'll need somebody that's maybe a little older and a little more, you know, a little more weathered than I am that knows how to do it. Or you could do the implant, but that's not the conversation. The conversation is the student, or the not student, but the dentist looks at it and goes, I've never done one of these. It's a heck of a lot more complicated than I know what to do. I know how to do implants. They taught me how to do that because the oral surgeon puts the implant in, and then the patient comes back to me, and the oral surgeon has probably already put what's called the abutment on the implant. And so the only thing I have to do is make a mold of it. I know how to do that. Send it to the lab. The lab makes the crown, but I don't know how to do that either. The lab will send me the crown. I get to glue the crown on top of the implant. Voila, I'm done. And so that whole conversation that goes off in the dentist's head translates to this tooth is non-restorable. This tooth can't be fixed. So the dentist makes a declarative, definitive statement that means the life or death of this tooth, your tooth, the life or death of you keeping one of your own natural healthy teeth in your mouth, or having somebody expose it to steel and sunlight, and therefore the tooth gets extracted, and now we're into a significantly more expensive and really unnecessary procedure when the tooth could have been restored if the dentist just knew how to do it. So this is a trend that I am seeing on a routine basis, and it makes everything suspect when anytime somebody says the tooth isn't restorable. Now, I will fully admit, I do indeed have, I've honed over the years, I've purposefully worked on it, a skill set and an ability to put teeth back together that most people don't think can be put back together. There are a lot of us that do it. There are a lot of us that have really pretty exceptional skill sets, all of us in the microscope world, all of us in the biomimetic world. We simply learn how to take a tooth that looks like it's a train wreck and put it back together and turn it into the Orient Express. We turn it into a really nice looking restoration that should last the patient for years and years and years. The problem I get is when somebody looks at these teeth and declares that they're hopeless, that they can't be fixed. There's no way on God's green earth that this tooth could ever be rehabilitated. You just need to have an implant and get over it. They make these declarative statements out of ignorance, not out of knowledge. And the patient, don't have any way of determining, discerning, parsing out which is right and which isn't right, which is true and which isn't true. So I always urge you, if you are having any dentist, I don't care if they're older than Methuselah, if they've got gray hair, if they've got bifocals, I don't care if they're young and amazingly healthy and fit and amazing eyesight. If you have a dentist tell you that you have a tooth that is hopeless, that is non-restorable, can't be fixed and has to come out, as a blanket statement, get a second opinion, because that is a one-way street. When the tooth comes out, it's never going back in. So if you want to make absolutely positively sure you're making the right decision, anytime somebody says this tooth has to come out, get a second opinion. Now, a second opinion could be real quick. You could take an intraoral photograph of the tooth. A dentist looks at it and goes, you know, there's nothing left. Good grief. Yeah, this thing has to go. Or you can have a dentist go, you know, that might be able to be put back together if you did this and this and this. So anytime you've been recommended to have a tooth removed because it's hopeless or non-restorable, go get a second opinion. Please, it may indeed save your tooth. Now, up next, we're going to continue our deep dive into the new patient experience. And this is one of those situations where the eyes certainly have it. Why would a dentist need to look at your eyes during a dental exam? I'm going to tell you right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at DTSradio.com. We're taking you behind the scenes.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
We're walking in to the offices of Microscope Dentistry by Shoup to provide you a preview of what to expect for your first face-to-face meeting with Dr. Shoup and his team. It's a reality radio experience right here on the Dr. Shoup Show. We're online at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, thanks again for being here with me. I really appreciate it. And what we're going to do now is continue on our much deeper look into the new patient experience at Microscope Dentistry by Shoup. Why are we doing this? Because I want you to have an understanding of what a really, truly thorough, complete dental examination is. Not simply just flopping into a chair and having somebody scrape on your teeth for 15 seconds and tell you something that's wrong. This is the way they teach it officially back in the day in dental school. We want to have a comprehensive look at you so we can have a really good understanding of what it is that is most appropriate for you. So we began by having you stand up. I told you it was a weird exam. Last week we had a conversation about we begin our examinations with you, the patient, standing up, me looking at you. We were checking shoulders and head alignment and hips and had you turn to the side and look at your profile and palpate your trapezius muscles and look at head position, all of those things. And now we're going on to phase number two, and I will simply invite you to sit down in the dental chair, but we're not going to lay you back in the dental chair. I want you sitting upright. I want you to be sitting with your back straight, your head up, looking straight ahead, and I want you to look at me, because the first thing I'm going to look at next, as Angela sits there and takes copious notes as we talk about these things, is your facial midline. All of us have an imaginary line that runs right through the middle of our forehead, right down between our eyebrows, right down between our eyes, across the bridge of our nose, right down through that little dip in your upper lip, and right down across your lips, and right down through the little dimple in the center of your chin, and that is your facial midline. We want to see how particularly straight and how symmetrical you are. Does the left side look like the right? There's been a number of studies done on beauty. You can go all around the world and you can be in India, you can be in Russia, you can be in China, you can be in South America. You can show an Eskimo face to somebody from the Amazon rainforest. You can show somebody who is from China to somebody who is from South Africa. And all you have to ask the people is, which face is more beautiful? You can show them any face you want, any two-face comparison. It is a universal truth that no matter who you ask and no matter what face you show them, the person you're asking will always pick as the most beautiful face, the most symmetrical face. People like Paul Newman, people like Charlize Theron, people like Brad Pitt, have amazingly symmetrical faces. Their faces, you literally can take one side of the face, flip it over, and it will superimpose perfectly on the other side. We consider those people the most beautiful people. So I want to look at how symmetrical your face is. How do you rank in terms of that beauty? Because if there's something we can do to enhance that for you, all the better. We then look at your eyes. Now, this is not an optician or ophthalmologist eye exam. No. What I'm looking at is, after I establish the midline of your face, I want to look at the pupils of your eyes. And I draw an imaginary line between the pupils of your eyes. And the pupils of your eyes should cross the midline at a 90-degree angle. Your eyes should be, the interpupillary line should be perpendicular to the vertical facial midline axis. If it's canted, if one eyeball is lower than the other eyeball, it throws off the symmetry. Why is this important? Why do I need to pay any attention to it? Because all of us, when we look at faces, we need a frame of reference. And what we humans do when we look at another face is we look at their eyes. It's an unconscious thing. You don't pay attention to it. It's not something that you analyze. But in our minds, we always look at the other person, we look at their eyes, and we create their eyes, the angle between their eyes, as what is the reference point, okay? And if things are parallel to that line between the pupils, the interpupillary line, then the face starts to have symmetry, and we consider that face more beautiful. The most important thing that I deal with is the smile. When you smile, look in the mirror, when you smile, the flat plane of your teeth, each corner of your mouth called the commissure of your mouth where the upper and lower lips come together on the side, and don't be the joker where it's all exaggerated up, and it's just the normal, that line from one corner of your mouth to the other should be parallel to the interpupillary line. So if your eyeballs are canted off, you know, one eyeball's higher than the other, then for beauty's sake, your smile needs to be off a little bit parallel to it. So should your teeth. The midline of your teeth should be on the facial midline. Your teeth shouldn't be rotated around to one side or the other. So if you're thinking about orthodontics, if you're thinking about Invisalign, if you're thinking about some sort of home orthodontic thing, please don't, then it's critical that the midline of your teeth get lined up with your facial midline. Now, here's the rub. When you do your home orthodontics and you make the molds of your teeth and you send it off with a picture, the technician has no idea where your teeth are in relationship necessarily to the midline of your face. So you can get things screwed up really fast. The other thing we look at is we actually have you say a bunch of sounds, phonetics. We have you say 55, 44. When you say F sounds, 55, 44, your bottom lip should come up and just brush against the edge of your upper front teeth. When you say 66, 77, S sounds are formed when your upper teeth and lower teeth come as close as they possibly can to touching, but they don't touch. And so you push all the air between your upper and lower teeth. That's where you create the S sounds of 66 and 77. We want to find out, as when you smile, your lower lip will curve a little bit, make kind of a half moon. The edge of your upper teeth should be right on the lower lip. If you've worn out your upper two front teeth and you smile, you'll have what's called an open smile. You'll have a reverse curve to your smile, highly unattractive. So we do all of these things with you sitting up, looking at your eyes first as the gauge for the rest of your face. So should your dentist look at your eyes in a dental exam? You bet your booty, if you want to have any of your aesthetic dental work done so that it enhances your attractiveness. So looking at the eyes is an essential part of any high-quality dental examination and part of what we always do for every new patient at Microscope Dentistry by Shoup. Now, up next, you get to meet my good friend Darcy, a truly cautionary tale of what happens when dentistry is free. She's going to tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. He talks about what other dentists don't want to talk about. He creates custom plans for every patient because it's not about in-the-box billables. Time to think outside the box as a dental consumer. This is the Dr. Shoup Show. We've compiled years of resources at DTSradio.com. Listen, then hit the site. Now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Yeah, there's a place for
Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate it. And if you've listened to the program at all, you know this is my whole favorite part of the program because I get to introduce to you old friends, new friends, and today we have a new friend of mine. Darcy, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Shoup. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you very, very much for being here with us and sharing your story. I kind of teased everybody a little bit at the early on that you're the only person, when I walked into the consultation to chat with you, you had totally bedazzled models.
Yes, I did. I now consider myself a slight queen in your office.
Oh, more than a slight queen. I mean, you had, There were gemstones and diamonds and everything all glued around like you would bedazzle a pair of jeans or something. I don't know who did that, but it was a great idea. We should do that all the time.
It was amazing. And I joked with the staff as I left that, you know, it's not very often that going to the dentist can make you feel like a queen, but I kind of feel like a queen at your office now. So we kind of joked about that. It was very nice.
I am most appreciative of that. Yeah, it was. I have to give credit where credit was due. It was Carrie, my lab technician, who was doing that because she just gets, you know, met you a little bit and wanted to do something fun for you. It was really, really cool. I also mentioned right off the bat, you actually worked in dentistry for a while, and as one of the perks for the job, you got your dental work done for free. Now, who isn't going to take advantage of, I get my dental work done for free? I mean, of course you would. But how did it work out?
Well, in the beginning, and while I was in that particular situation, it was great because I've always struggled with cavities and just I can remember starting to go to a dentist's office at the age of 5 years old for fillings and such. And we were very, very diligent about going every 6 months and very diligent about our oral care. And so that led into my career in dentistry. And as part of working through the office, I knew that I had had some cavities and maybe could, you know, use some sealants. And one of the perks is that you can have, just as you mentioned, that free dental care. And that ranged anywhere from quick cleaning all the way up to a trial run for braces. But what I really realized as a part of that and as I became, you know, more removed from the dental industry was that really I didn't take very good care of my mouth by going through that free dental care. It wasn't that it was poor care. It was very, very good care. But to be honest with you, it was really just fixing what was already going on. It was putting Band-Aids on problems that I had, which at the time was really the way that the industry went. That's how everybody did everything. And I really thought that I was doing the best that I could for my oral health care. And then as I got out, and as I said, you know, I kind of changed careers and you move on and you go to see other dentists. And all I was hearing was, you need 13 crowns. You need 12 crowns. You've got this. And I kept thinking all along, there has to have been something deeper. There's got to be a reason why myself, who takes very good care of my teeth and goes to the dentist all the time, why am I having these problems? And I know several people who don't go to the dentist. And they're not having any problems. There's something different. And so that's where I started to kind of rethink, that healthcare that I got back when I was employed there and it being free, it really wasn't what I needed.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that so much, because that is really, really a key thing that you mentioned and really important. Even though people go to the dentist, if the dentist isn't keyed in on what you were keyed in on, you were more advanced in that you were trying to think, why is this happening? What's the root cause of all of this decay? Here I am working like crazy, doing all the things I'm supposed to do. I'm brushing, I'm flossing, I go every 6 months, but I have tons of cavities. And here's some other joker over here that doesn't hardly go, eats Twinkies all day long, doesn't even own a toothbrush, and they have very little dental problems. What's the deal? Why am I the one plagued with it? They don't talk about the underlying bacteria and pH problems. They simply are the carpenters. They simply repair things, and the things that they repair go bad. How frustrating. I mean, you went to several. I mean, now they're going to want to crown all your teeth. How disappointing and frustrating were you about that?
It was to the point where I quit going to the dentist. And remember, I mentioned I've been going to the dentist every 6 months since I was 5 years old.
Sure.
And my final straw was when I sat, I had an 8 hour long, one day crown. You could go same day crown. I was in the chair for 8 hours.
Oh dear.
And, when I left, not only was I, frustrated, but I was also left, with the knowledge and the treatment plan that I would need another 11 crowns in my teeth, over the course of X amount of months. And I just broke down and thought, if I put this much work into my mouth already, and someone is telling me that there's still more to do, I will have no teeth in my mouth that is, none that are not a crown, really. And what is the purpose of keeping my teeth? Well, I know from being in the dental field that you want to keep your natural teeth as much as possible. There is no replacement for the real thing. There's no substitute. So, I really was just at my wit's end, and I thought, I cannot go in again and sit there for 8 hours, 11 more times, to go through this only to have more and more issues.
I couldn't even imagine that. Number one, it should have never taken 8 hours. Oh, my gosh. That's insane. So what was there that you heard, or what got you to me?
I'll be honest, I was listening to WIBC on my way home from yoga class one night, and I heard dentistry done differently, and I heard microscopic, and I thought, you know what? This guy's talking my language. I'm not I'm an exception to the rule. There's some reason why my mouth is different than all these other people that I know. I need somebody who has a different approach. And as I listened to the program, I was hooked. And I immediately went home. I got on the website. I submitted my consultation. Your office called me like the next day, and I told them my story. And it's just been, you know, it's been an amazing adventure since.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And it warms my heart that you would characterize it as an amazing adventure. So how did things go? What happened in our conversation? It sounds like you have a lot more hope, and it sounds like you do not have nearly the pessimism that you used to have.
No, I do not. No, not at all. I'm so excited. I laugh when I leave the office because I'm excited because you have to understand these problems have plagued me for so long that the idea and the approach that your office takes is different to where I really do believe it's something that's going to change my life. You know, even from the consultation and getting to sit down and actually see the bacteria that was in my mouth, that really hit home to say, okay, this is really what's in here. And then to have that individualized treatment plan along with the equipment and the follow-up, I mean, I was just ecstatic to leave the office and to get that treatment plan started. And it was actually my pessimism. It was interesting because I thought this is going to take so long and I'm going to have to go back for like 24 appointments to get my teeth good. And I came in yesterday for my second appointment and I don't have to come back for 3 months. It's that targeted, and it made that much of a difference that I can actually breathe and think for the next 3 months, my teeth are good. You know, they're clean. I'm on the right track. That's how it feels.
Well, I am absolutely delighted and thrilled and happy for you. And because if there's anybody that deserves a break dentally, it sure is you. And and we're not going to do 11 more crowns at 8 hours apiece. I promise you that.
That was the big thing that really drew me, not just in microscopic approach, but also that there's no new crowns, and that was, that's not just something you say. That's in my treatment plan. It specifically does say, Darcy, no new crowns. And we have a plan to fix every one of my teeth using what I already have and using that good tissue. And that means a lot.
Yeah, you don't want to be ground and crowned. That's just not a good formula, and it never has been, and it's still not. And so, Darcy, I thank you so much for spending the time and coming on and sharing your story with everybody. I know that you've reached out, and somebody is hearing this and going, you know, that sounds a lot like me, and gosh, I was about ready to, you know, to throw it all in and be done, but maybe you've given somebody a little glimmer of hope like you have now, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dr. Shoup. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You know what? We'll see you at the office next time, kiddo, and just keep on going with the faith because you're going to be fine.
All right. Don't you worry. I've got it. I've got it. Thank you so much.
I got you, kiddo. All right. See you later. Okay, Thank you.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. Thank you very much for spending another hour with me. I'm giving you a heads up. We are headed, despite the coronavirus, to Kenya. The last week of May and the first week of June, we are going to be working on the children from the Chileta School, who serves the kids coming out of the Kibera slums in the middle of downtown Nairobi. We'll be treating children for 2 weeks, and we need your help. We need your funding. We need your money. So we need you to go to ddsradio.com and click over to the Kind link, or just go to kinddentistry.org. And make your donation. We are going to be doing backpacks and sealants and everything for the kids. So, until you and I have a chance to chat next time, be sure to brush and floss.
Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, baby, the whole world smiles.